This is edition number 2010 of the Mardler, recorded in Aylsham on Friday, the 27th of March, 2026. Hello, you are listening to the Mardler, the weekly talking newspaper for North Norfolk. Today we bring you the week's news and views from the North Norfolk News of Thursday, the 26th of March, 2026. My name is Barbara Calver and my fellow readers are...
Mary Beattie,
Clive McCombie
and Julie Reeve.
On the notice board today, this week the sun will rise around 25 minutes to 7 and will set at about 25 minutes past 7.
The magazine supplement will follow a little later in the programme and includes the life of Edith Cavell, the 100th birthday of David Attenborough, My Music for You and The Return of the Beaver.
But we begin with the main news items, which include flood defences, fuel prices, Norfolk pig farm appraised, heating oil bills, controversial home plans, rail ticket changes, Norfolk Recycling Centre and Heritage Chalk Streams. Let's start with those lead stories.
Communities across Norfolk and Waveney will get a slice of £56 million government investment in flood defences. But despite the funding boost, there is disappointment that one erosion-threatened village has missed out. The funding, announced by the Environment Agency, will pay for flood defence schemes across the region in 2026-27 amid the growing threat of flooding and coastal erosion. Among the places that will benefit from the investment are Beccles, Benacre and Kessingland, Dereham, Eastern Broad, Great Yarmouth, Haddiscoe, Haysborough to Winterton, Hockwold, Magdalen Fen, the River Bure and the Upper Thurne. The schemes will begin installation in spring, with completion expected by summer this year. There is some disappointment, however, that Hemsby is not included in the plans, with the village having suffered unprecedented rates of coastal erosion. It has lost more than 10 metres of land in the last year and seen more than 36 properties demolished since 2013. Councillor James Bensley, who represents the East Fleg ward on Great Yarmouth Borough Council and serves as the area's county councillor, said, "I'm disappointed, angry, upset and, to be honest, confused by the whole fact that Hemsby doesn't get any funding. We're all still suffering at this time in the shadow of erosion, so when will we get help from central government?" He said the latest round of flood defence funding was another example of how Hemsby has been let down by the formula and mechanisms in place for coastal communities that need serious attention for all of our coastal communities here in Norfolk. Graham Verrier, Environment Agency Area Director for Essex, Norfolk and Suffolk, said, "This investment allows the Environment Agency and our partners to deliver 50 flood schemes across the east of England, protecting homes and businesses from flooding. Working with local councils and partners, we're delivering a wide range of projects, from traditional flood defences to natural flood management, to protect communities better now and into the future." Floods Minister Emma Hardy said, "Flooding can turn lives upside down in a matter of hours, destroying homes, shutting down businesses and leaving communities facing months of heartbreak and recovery. That's why we're investing £56 million here in the east of England as part of a record national programme to strengthen flood defences, protect families and businesses and help communities feel safer in the face of increasingly extreme weather. This investment will help protect more properties and businesses across the region while supporting jobs, growth and local resilience." In late January this year, the government separately announced £18 million for coastal adaptation pilots, specifically targeting Norfolk, Suffolk and East Riding of Yorkshire. The money will fund pilot schemes, including selective property purchases and new financing solutions in areas where homes face imminent risk from erosion. Local leaders in Hemsby hope that some of those funds will help villagers adapt to the rapidly advancing coastline.
Rising fuel prices, triggered by the conflict in the Middle East, could further hike Norfolk County Council's £67 million plus bill to get children to and from school. Officials at County Hall have warned the authority could be left with a significant hole in its budget for the next year because surging oil prices sparked by the Iran war are increasing costs for petrol and diesel. The Conservative-run council, which has a statutory duty to provide free travel to their nearest suitable school for eligible children aged 5 to 16, pays for taxis, buses and minibuses to get youngsters to and from their education. The total cost last year was £67.4 million, with £42 million of that used to get children with special educational needs and disabilities, otherwise known as SEND, to schools best placed to cater for their needs. That can mean costly taxi rides miles from their homes, including to schools outside Norfolk, with the council tendering for contracts to provide for those journeys. A review of the contracts is coming up in April, and council officials are aware that companies could up their prices to cover rising fuel costs. The matter was discussed at a meeting of the Council's Children, Families and Communities Committee after Conservative Councillor John Fisher asked if the rising costs were a worry. I just wonder whether there is a risk with that impacting on this year's budget, or do we think we've got it under control? James Wilson, the Council's Director of Sufficiency, Planning and Education Strategy, said, "This is a challenge we have experienced in the past, most recently when the Ukraine war broke out some years ago. I wouldn't want to over-egg the extent to which it completely changes the price point of transport, but it's definitely a factor. So if the oil price stays where it is today for the next year's budget will have a significant hole in it." The council's contracts with providers are reviewed in April, when an uplift in prices is agreed. Officers acknowledged if fuel prices continue to rise, companies could look to be paid more, and they might have to go through a similar complex procedure to when the war in Ukraine broke out. Norfolk County Council currently provides home-to-school transport for around 18,600 pupils. Of those, there are currently 3,743 SEND children who require specialist transport to attend school. In addition to those youngsters, there are almost 500 SEND students aged over 16, for which the council also has to legally provide specialist transport to schools or colleges. The council has been trying to bring the bill down through more efficient planning, encouraging children to make their own way to school if appropriate, and re-procuring the contracts for trips. New special schools are planned at Great Yarmouth and Downham Market, with specialist resource bases also being created at mainstream schools, so SEND children do not have to be transported lengthy distances. The authority has also been using computer software to help optimise the routes which are taken to get youngsters to and from schools to reduce mileage.
A Norfolk pig farmer has been praised for his exemplary national leadership after steering his sector through some of its most difficult years. Rob Mutimer is stepping down after 5 years as chairman of the National Pig Association, NPA. His tenure coincided with the crises, including post-Brexit labour shortages in meat processing plants, complicated by the COVID pandemic, which created huge backlogs of pigs on UK farms and led to thousands of animals being culled on farms in 2021 and 2022. He also fought for his industry during 10 successive quarters of financial losses between 2021 and 2023, driven by falling pig prices and record high costs, particularly as fuel and animal feed values soared after the war in Ukraine drove up grain prices. NPA Chief Executive Lizzie Wilson said Mr. Mutimer had served with distinction and welcome calm during some of the hardest years the pig sector will ever face. Mr. Mutimer, who runs an outdoor pig unit and wholesale butchery business at Swannington Farm to Fork in North Norfolk, with his wife Helen, said, "It has been an honour and a privilege to serve as the NPA's chair for the past 5 years. At times, it has been incredibly difficult, but I have enjoyed the challenge." When you do something like this, you actually learn more about yourself and the industry during challenging times. "I have great affection for my time leading the NPA. It is definitely time to retire, but I look back with great fondness on the people I have worked with and the connections I made." Mr. Mutimer said the biggest concern currently facing East Anglia's pig industry is African swine fever, following a major outbreak in Spain. But he is confident his successor is up to the challenge. Former Bury St Edmunds MP Joe Churchill took over as NPA chairman this week, marking a change in direction for the organisation, which has previously appointed pig producers to the role. "I think it is the right choice," said Mr. Mutimer. "I think it's a brave choice as well. We are a political lobbying organisation, so Joe is very well suited to that. She has much better contacts than I have, and we need to keep lobbying the government to make sure the legislations they are planning aren't going to be detrimental."
A Norfolk council is considering spending £50,000 to help locals with their heating oil bills. Members of North Norfolk District Council were due to vote on the proposal at a meeting this week. The scheme, which officers have recommended be approved, will see the money distributed as small grants to households experiencing financial difficulties as a result of surging oil prices driven by the conflict in Iran. The sharp rise has prompted complaints from families across Norfolk that the cost of domestic heating oil has doubled and led to growing calls for government intervention. Earlier this week, Prime Minister Keir Starmer announced £53 million of investment to help vulnerable households hit by the steepest increase in costs. However, Tim Adams, the Liberal Democrat leader at North Norfolk District Council, has said the authority were not entirely sure the government intervention will go far enough. He said there's been an awful lot of pressure on people trying to secure heating oil in recent weeks. Local companies are trying to look after their customers, but there is already a lot of risk for people suffering with fuel poverty. We've got an awful lot of residents that are off-grid in terms of their energy supply, so we needed to do something to support them. The £50,000 would be drawn from a forecast underspend in the council's general fund, which is currently projected to show a surplus of £383,000 for the 2025-26 financial year. That surplus has arisen from a combination of staff vacancies saving around £500,000, higher than expected planning fee income of £300,000 from several large applications, and £183,000 in additional interest earnings. The Cabinet has recommended that the donation is awarded directly to local charities, which would then distribute the funds to eligible residents. A final decision was expected to be made at a full council meeting at North Norfolk District Council on Wednesday, March the 25th.
Controversial plans for almost 120 homes and a 60-bed care home on the edge of a Norfolk town have been rubber-stamped despite concerns over flooding. North Norfolk District Council's Liberal Democrat leader, Tim Adams, was among critics concerned that development on the 15-acre site in Cromer would be susceptible to the issue. His council had approved outline permission for the proposals put forward by Barrett David Wilson Homes Anglia for the land between Overstrand Road and Northreps Road in 2024. But at a meeting on Thursday, March 19th, the Planning Committee had to make a decision on reserved matters, which included the layout and design of the homes on the land opposite Royal Cromer Golf Club. However, a number of objectors expressed concerns about the risk of flooding on the site and how that would be managed. Among them was Mr. Adams, who said, "This has historically been a site of some controversy due to the on and off floods risks. It was only reluctantly approved for further consideration as a result of site-specific policies on flooding prevention. Policies, I would argue, are not being followed here to the letter now." He said he feared the drainage infrastructure would not be sufficient to cope with the new housing. But North Norfolk District Council officers told members of the committee that drainage was not a matter related to the application before them, which was about layout, landscaping, appearance, access and scale. They warned the committee that were they to reject the application because of concerns over drainage, it would leave the council open to an appeal by the developers. They said Norfolk County Council as flood authority and Anglian Water had no objections to the developers' drainage plans. The committee then voted to approve the application with 7 in favour, 3 against and a single abstention. The plans include a mix of 53 affordable and 65 market properties with a range of 1-bedroom to 4-bedroom homes set to be built, while the care home is expected to be a specialist facility for older people.
Rail passengers in Norfolk will soon see a change in how they purchase tickets. People with rail cards will now have to verify their legitimacy before purchasing discounted tickets. Railcards are available to a wide range of people, such as those over the age of 60, as well as 16 to 25-year-olds. The cards commonly offer up to a third in savings on train tickets. Greater Anglia, the largest operator in the region, will introduce the pilot scheme rolled out by the Department for Transport this year. It is then expected to be introduced across the whole rail network. The move will introduce a railcard verification step online via an app, at ticket machines and at the ticket office before any discount can be obtained. Customers will be either required to scan the card, enter its unique number, or show it to staff. Those who are unable to do so, even if they have a rail card, will have to pay full price or face a penalty fare of £100 plus the cost of the intended journey.
A decision to relocate a Norfolk recycling centre might not have been made had council officers not made an error, the Court of Appeal has been told. Lawyers for Martin and Oliver Reed, who run Hilltop Outdoor Centre in North Norfolk, argue Norfolk County Council acted unlawfully over the mooted move of Sheringham Recycling Centre. The Council's Planning Committee agreed in 2024 to grant permission for the centre to be moved from its current location off Holt Road in Beeston Regis to fields opposite. Those fields are in a national landscape. previously known as an area of outstanding national beauty, and next to the Reeds Activity Centre. The Reeds maintain the Council failed to follow proper and lawful processes, including exploration of alternative sites. They previously challenged the decision in the High Court, only for Judge Mrs. Justice Leven to dismiss all the grounds their barristers argued. But the Reeds secured permission to appeal. At Wednesday's, March the 18th, appeal hearing, their barrister, Richard Harwood, KC, told judges an error meant the planning committee was misled over potential alternative sites when it took the decision to grant permission. Mr. Harwood said that while the planning committee had been told about a quarry site which had been considered, they were told it was inside the National Landscape Area. But Mr. Harwood said that was stated because of an error by an officer who had confused Beeston Regis Quarry with East Beckham Quarry, which is outside the National Landscape Area. He said the council had stated the quarry owner had not engaged during a process to identify potential alternative sites. However, Mr. Harwood told judges the owner of nearby East Beckham Quarry had come forward to say they had emails showing they had tried to contact the council about a deal in 2019 and 2021. Mr. Harwood said the planning committee might have made a different decision had that information been given to them. But Harriet Townsend, for Norfolk County Council, told judges the council's agents had made six attempts to contact the quarry owner in 2019 and had not managed to get hold of him. She said it was reasonable for council officers to tell the committee the owner had not engaged. She said, "The key fact in this case is that the quarry was not available at the time of the decision." Appeal Court judges Lord Justice Zaccaroli, Lord Justice Miles, and Lord Justice Dove said they would reserve judgment to a later date.
The Bishop of Norwich has joined Norfolk MPs in a bid to gain UNESCO World Heritage status for the county's chalk rivers, rated as precious as the Great Barrier Reef. Campaigners want to see chalk streams recognised among the rarest and most important habitats on Earth. Only around 200 are known to exist worldwide, 85% of which are in England, and many are in Norfolk, including the Glaven, Ingle, Hun, Stiffkey, Tiffy, Wissey and Wensum. They support more species of plants than any other English river type, and provide vital habitats for threatened wildlife, including water vole, brown trout and white-clawed crayfish. A bill was introduced to Parliament on February the 25th, asking the government to nominate the UK's chalk streams as a serial UNESCO Natural World Heritage Site to highlight their international significance, strengthen their protection and help galvanise public engagement and investment in their recovery. And a letter to Environment Secretary Emma Reynolds has been signed by 50 MPs and peers, including South West Norfolk MP Terry Jermy, Waveney Valley MP Adrian Ramsey, and the Bishop of Norwich, the Right Reverend Graham Usher. The letter says chalk streams are among the most biodiverse and ecologically significant freshwater ecosystems in the world, and are as precious to England as the Great Barrier Reef is to Australia or the Amazon rainforest to South America. Yet despite this global significance, the majority of our chalk streams are in a perilous state, it adds. Restoring and protecting our chalk streams is a matter of global significance. Bishop Graham said, "People are rightly horrified by the destruction of rainforests thousands of miles away, but sometimes seem less concerned about collapsing ecosystems almost literally on our doorstep. Christians are called to advocate for God's creation. In our nature-impoverished land, this means protecting our heritage of natural wonders, including precious chalk streams. Mr. Jeremy added, "These rivers are as rare and important as the Great Barrier Reef, and are a larger driver of tourism, which is fundamental to rural economies like ours. But instead of being protected, they're being polluted, dried up, and ignored."
Our next few news stories include court appearance, new homes plans, Norfolk Holiday Park, Aylsham Garden Centre, Broad's Mill, Fun Dog Show, Norfolk Pub Award, and a pop-up bakery.
The former partner of a man accused of cocaine dealing has appeared in court, also accused of involvement in drug supply. Danielle Hewson, 39, is charged with being concerned in the supply of cocaine between October 1st last year and January 17th. The 39-year-old of Waller Drive in Attleborough did not enter a plea when she appeared before Norwich Magistrates Court. The court was told, if convicted, the offences carried a starting point of 8.5 years in prison. District Judge Paul Booty declined jurisdiction and sent her case to Norwich Crown Court with a plea and trial preparation hearing set for April 21st. She was given unconditional bail. Her co-defendant and former partner, Aaron Hewson, 36, of Linwood Road in Cromer, is already set to stand trial in March 2027. He has previously pleaded not guilty at Norwich Crown Court to being concerned in the supply of cocaine between January 25 and January 2026. He also denies charges of laundering the proceeds of crime between the same dates.
A former Norfolk garden centre may be knocked down and replaced with new homes, it has been revealed. Plans have emerged to demolish the Overstrand Garden Centre on Munsley Road near Cromer and build 15 homes on the site. Victoria Sheridan, the owner of the centre, submitted the outline proposal to North Norfolk District Council. The bid aims to provide houses suitable for an ageing population. It comes after the garden centre closed in September 2024. As it was deemed not financially viable, with costs rising, the planning documents say. A statement continued, "The business has failed, and in its current location, it is unlikely that a new operator can be found. The village population does not appear sufficient to support such an amenity, and a residential development will see a more suitable use for the land, along with a modest increase in potential demand for existing successful village amenities. The development would include a mix of properties, and 35% will be classed as affordable, in line with local policy. To view or comment on the plans, search PO/26/0375 on NNDC planning portal.
A North Norfolk holiday park has undergone a makeover during its winter closure. The team at Kelling Heath Holiday Park in Weybourne has been busy getting ready for the season ahead by adding new additions. The work at the park includes a new red squirrel enclosure, the planting of 600 trees, and the village store has had a glow-up. A spokesman for the holiday park said, "Safe to say, it's been a busy one, and we can't wait to welcome you back to see it all for yourself." The red squirrel enclosure has provided a home for several successful breeding pairs, with nearly 100 kittens born. When it is complete, the new enclosure will offer more space and an even better environment for the squirrels. The park's outside pool area was also taken apart for a refurbishment, and the team got crafty, turning old wood into fabulous new bird houses.
A garden centre in North Norfolk is reopening after a fire. The blaze took place at Aylsham Garden Centre on February the 16th. Bosses were forced to close the site due to the damage throughout the building caused by smoke from the fire. The business had also been without electricity as a result. At the time, a spokeswoman for the centre said, "Unfortunately, the smoke and soot damage has been substantial. We are working with our insurers to get up and running as soon as we can. It's very frustrating for all of us." Insurers have said the business could not reopen until it had undergone a professional cleaning. However, more than a month later, a spokeswoman for Aylsham Garden Centre confirmed that it will be reopening at the end of next week. "Great news, folks," she said. "After our awful fire and closure, we hope to reopen next week. We will confirm the day by the end of this week."
It is one of the most photographed mills on the Norfolk Broads, and now work has started to save it for future generations. Norfolk County Council has begun restoration work on Turf Fen Mill, a 31-foot-tall Grade 2 listed Victorian drainage mill set by the River Ant on the Howe Hill estate. The £450,000 project will see the careful dismantling of key components of the building, including the cap, stocks and fantail, so they can be repaired and reinstalled later this year. One of the three mills on the Howe Hill estate, south of Irstead, the mill was built in the 1860s by millwright William Rust to drain surrounding marshland into the Ant so fields could be used for livestock. The mill fell out of use in the 1920s. The mill was previously restored between 1984 and 1987 when steel stocks were added and the mill was returned to turning condition. But its condition has since declined and it was added to Historic England's Heritage at Risk Register in 2023. A year later, Historic England announced a £242,870 grant for Norfolk County Council to help restore it. Kay Mason Billig, leader of Conservative-run County Hall, said, "Turf Fen Mill is a treasured part of Norfolk's landscape, and its restoration represents a shared commitment to protecting the heritage that defines the Broads. This project brings together expert partners and vital funding to ensure the mill can be enjoyed by future generations. I'm delighted to see work now underway on such an important landmark for our county." The County Council is doing the work in partnership with Norfolk Windmills Trust and the Broads Authority, with funding from Historic England, Norfolk Windmills Trust, the Pilgrim Trust, and the Geoffrey Watling Charity. The project is expected to be completed by the end of 2026.
The Overstrand Fun Dog Show returns on Monday, May the 4th at the Seamarge Hotel in Overstrand and will feature the crowd-pleasing category, A Face Only a Mother Could Love. The bank holiday event, organised by Overstrand Together, promises a full afternoon of canine fun starting at noon, with class judging beginning at 1:30 p.m. Paul Cullen, organiser at Overstrand Together, said, "We're not looking for perfection or pedigree. We want dogs with character and all the charm of a stubbed toe. The ones whose owners wouldn't change a single gloriously fabulous wonky thing about them." The show includes 12 categories such as Waggy Tail, Best Rescue, Top Trick, Fancy Dress and Best in Show. Visitors can also enjoy an agility course, stalls, a raffle, bar and refreshments. The event is free to attend and welcomes everyone, whether or not they have a dog. All funds raised go to Overstrand Together. The show is supported by Cromer Vets and the Seamarge Hotel. The event runs until 5 p.m.
A pub in the heart of a North Norfolk town has been named the best in the county. The Peasant's Tavern in North Walsham has once again earned the title of 2026 District Pub of the Year, having been crowned in its first year of opening in 2025. Known for its welcoming atmosphere and good reviews, the Peasant's Tavern is a favourite haunt, offering a selection of ever-changing ales. It has a strong reputation for hosting acoustic music sessions and a relaxed atmosphere for a meal. The friends, staff and directors of the Peasant's Tavern are blown away that we have received this award for 2 years on the trot, Charlie Holden, pub manager and director of the Peasant's Tavern, said. We have only been open for 2 years in April and are both astounded and delighted to receive this recognition. We continue to build on our foundations, and we owe our ever-growing family of fantastic customers our wholehearted thanks and appreciation. Our team here remains determined and committed to keep working hard in offering excellent service, fantastic ales, and a welcoming environment for all.
A bakery run by two best friends will be supplying treats to the UK's best garden during its 2026 season. Sammy Sparrow and Kelly Kelly opened Bake a Wish in Stalham's High Street last August. After a strong start, the pair have now secured a pop-up at East Ruston Old Vicarage. They will be supplying a selection of items for the tea room so that visitors can grab a slice of Bake a Wish to enjoy while exploring the beautiful surroundings. We are incredibly honoured for the opportunity to work with such a well-established, well-respected local business and are even more excited to see what other possibilities this partnership may bring, the pair said. East Ruston Old Vicarage can be found between Honing and Haysborough and was recently crowned the UK's best garden to visit in the spring. Visitors can soak up the sun while exploring features such as subtropical gardens, a glasshouse, and sculptures. There are also toilets on site parking, a plant shop and accessible garden layout, while assistant dogs are welcome. In 2026, it will be open from April the 1st until October the 31st. You are listening to edition number 2010 of The Mardler, recorded on Friday the 27th of March 2026. Still to come, there are items about new lease of life for Country Pub, new minibus, Hollywood star visits Cromer, and of course the Mardler magazine supplement. But before all of that, we turn to this week's obituaries.
Gwendolyn Braybrook passed away on March 16th, 2026, aged 78. Dearly loved wife to Martin, deceased, mother to Alison and Suzanne, and proud grandmother to Harry, Samuel, William, Benjamin, and Isabel. The funeral service will be held at All Saints Church, Beeston Regis, on Tuesday, March 31st, 2026 at 2 p.m. Donations to Macmillan Cancer Support, North Norfolk, and All Saints Church, Beeston Regis, may be left at the service. Family flowers only, please. All inquiries to Fox's Funeral Services, telephone 01263 512 427.
Patterson Beryl Elsie, née Fires, passed away peacefully at home on March the 15th, aged 98. Devoted wife of the late George Patterson, mother to Ian and Julie, grandmother to Katie, great-grandmother to Jake, and mother-in-law to Michael and Janet. Beryl will be remembered for the many costumes she made for productions at the Sheringham Little Theatre and Cromer Pier, as well as making outfits for local town criers and dressing many brides and bridesmaids over the years. She also worked with husband George in their business Geograph Photography in Sheringham in the 1970s and 1980s. A celebration of her life for family and friends will be held in due course. A long life, well lived, sadly missed by all.
And now, some local events. From tulips to rhododendrons, April is a month full of colourful floral displays as gardens burst into bloom. To celebrate the spring season, secret gardens across Norfolk are opening to the public as part of the National Garden Scheme, NGS. The NGS raises money for health and nursing charities through admissions and refreshments. Here are just five venues for you to consider visiting. Firstly, Gayton Hall at Church Farm Barns, Gayton, King's Lynn, on Sunday, April the 1st, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. The price is £6 and children go free. Second, Holcombe Hall Garden at Holcombe, Wells Next the Sea, on Friday, April the 17th, from 10:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. Entrance is £20 and booking is essential at www.ngs.org.uk. Next, East Ruston Old Vicarage. At East Ruston Old Vicarage, Vicarage Road, on Saturday, April the 18th, from 12 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. Entrance, cost £15.50, and children go free. Fourthly, the Elms, at Toft Monk's Beckles, on Sunday, April the 19th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. The price is £5 and children go free. And finally, Wreatham Lodge at Church Road, Wreatham, Thetford, on Sunday, April the 26th, between 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Entrance is £7 and children go free.
On the 3rd and 4th of April, there is an Easter adventure at Shottisham Park. It's open from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m. Adults are £11.50 and child £8.50. Under threes go free. Arrival slots are at 10 a.m, 11 a.m, noon and 1 p.m. There will be woodland Easter egg hunts, Gerald's colouring competition, Easter arts and crafts, meeting farm animals, spring countryside photo opportunities, plus local food and drink available. That's at the Old Stables, Shottisham Park, Norwich Road, Shottisham. From the 3rd to the 6th of April, there's an Easter treasure quest and egg hunt at Hoveton Hall Estate. Enjoy the spring gardens of Hoveton Hall Estate with free Easter entertainment for children. On Friday the 3rd of April, Sonic Illuminations, Migration. Violinist Hannah Perrone and artist Marion Saunders present Sonic Illuminations, exploring bird migration through music and visuals. It's at 7 p.m. and costs £17.43. At the Norfolk Wildfowl Trust, Clye Marshes Visitor Centre, Coast Road, Clye Next the Sea. 01603 625540. And from the 28th of March till the 12th of April, Easter Express. Free Easter egg for every child on completion of our Easter stamp trail at both Aylsham and Wroxham Bure Valley Railway stations. It starts at 9 o'clock in the morning and is £25. Booking is advised. For information, ring Aylsham 01263 733 858.
Wednesday 1st of April, family event, pond dipping. 10:30 a.m. and the cost £5.73. Eventbrite.co.uk. Do you know what lurks in the unseen watery world? Come along to our session to find out. NWT Clay Marshes, Coast Road, Clay Next the Sea. Info at norfolkwildlifetrust.org.uk. 01603 625540. Thursday, 2nd of April, Diddy Car Racing with inflatable track. 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. The ideal school break activity for racing fans. Children can jump onto a Diddy car and speed around the inflatable course set up inside Castle Quarter for one day only. Castle Quarter, 100 Castle Meadow, Norwich. Info at castlequarternorwich.co.uk. 01603 766 430. Again, Thursday, 2nd of April, the Great Baldini at 2:30 p.m. The Maltings, Wells Next the Sea. And Martin Stevenson and the Dainties, 8 p.m, Cromer Community Centre, Garden Street, Cromer.
We turn now to this week's Mardler magazine supplement, where we learn about the life of Edith Cavell, the 100th birthday of David Attenborough, My Music for You, and the return of the Beaver.
Edith Cavell, the Inspirational First World War Heroine, by Margaret Brecknell, Norfolk Magazine, March 2026. Nurse Edith Cavell's death at the hands of the German forces in October 1915 attracted headlines across the world and changed attitudes towards the conflict. Edith was born on December 4th, 1865, in the picturesque village of Swardston, where her father Frederick served as the vicar of St Mary's Church. Until her mid-teens, Edith was taught at home with her two younger sisters, and here she first learnt the Christian principles of faith and duty to which she would later dedicate her life. She subsequently trained as a student teacher in Peterborough. This enabled her to find work as a governess with some of Norfolk's most prominent families, including the Gurneys of Keswick New Hall, until in 1890 she decided to move abroad after being recommended a post in Belgium. She spent the next 5 years working for the Francois family in Brussels and only returned home when her father became seriously ill. Having nursed Frederick successfully back to health, Edith decided that nursing should be her vocation. She began her training at the Royal London Hospital in Whitechapel under its formidable matron, Eva Lux, who was known for her progressive teaching methods. Edith soon found herself on the front line when she was sent to assist with the deadly typhoid outbreak in Maidstone. As well as being one of those to be awarded a commemorative silver medal for her efforts by the town's grateful residents. Thereafter, Edith steadily rose through the ranks, culminating in early 1907 with her first role as matron in Salford. Soon afterwards, she was contacted by one of Belgium's most foremost surgeons, Dr. Antoine Depage, who also happened to be a close friend of the Francois family. He was eager to establish the country's first nurse training school in Brussels and invited Edith to become its head. Now in her early 40s, she welcomed the opportunity to take on this exciting new role at Birkendale Medical Institute. In 1914, Edith was making her annual summer trip home to Norfolk when news emerged that war had broken out in Western Europe and Germany was on the verge of invading Belgium. Fearful for her safety, Edith's family begged her to stay, but she left for Brussels almost immediately, declaring that, "At a time like this, I am more needed than ever." As the fighting quickly escalated, thousands of wounded soldiers from both sides began to crowd into the city, and the Birkendeel Medical Institute was converted into a Red Cross hospital. One night, two British servicemen arrived at the hospital. With the Belgian capital now under German martial law, anyone who was caught helping the enemy risked severe punishment. Yet Edith sheltered them for 2 weeks and then liaised with the Belgian underground movement to arrange their safe passage to the neutral Netherlands. These men were just the first of many whom Edith helped to escape over the course of the next year. Her luck finally ran out in August 1915, when she was betrayed by Georges Gaston Queen, a Belgian collaborator who had posed as a French officer in need of her help. Edith was arrested and held in solitary confinement, where under interrogation she admitted to having helped nearly 200 enemy soldiers to escape. The real figure may well have been even higher. Despite international diplomatic efforts, Edith was found guilty of treason at her subsequent court-martial and on October 11th, 1915, was sentenced to death. Edith was executed by firing squad at dawn the following morning, before there was even time to make a final plea for clemency. The German authorities may well have intended her death to discourage other would-be resistance workers. Instead, her cruel fate became a byword for German brutality and an effective propaganda tool in encouraging others to join the Allied cause. For obeying the dictates of heart and conscience, Miss Cavell suffered a martyr's death, wrote the Norfolk News in late October 1915. Courageous and principled to the end, Edith viewed her own fate in a different light. She told her friend, the Reverend Sterling Garn, on the eve of her execution, that she did not wish to be remembered as a heroine or martyr, but simply as a nurse who tried to do her duty. Edith's extraordinary sacrifice has since been commemorated in memorials, not only in her native county, but as far afield as Australia and Canada. Yet she herself may well have taken more satisfaction from the fact that her extraordinary example of selfless service towards others continues to inspire today.
Sir David Attenborough's 100th Birthday by Lauren Del Fabbro, Norfolk Magazine, March the 7th, 2026. Sir David Attenborough's 100th birthday will be celebrated with three new shows, the BBC has announced. The broadcaster will mark Sir David's extraordinary milestone on May the 8th, with a week-long special programming featuring new and old shows by the presenter. One of the new programmes, titled Making Life on Earth, Attenborough's Greatest Adventure, we'll go behind the scenes of the landmark BBC One series, which was first broadcast in 1979, and followed Sir David as he travelled to 40 countries to film 600 species. It will feature new interviews of the wildlife broadcaster and the original production team as they reflect on the making of life on Earth and the challenges they faced along the way, including a coup in the Comoros being shot at, as well as Sir David's encounter with gorillas in Rwanda. Sir David will also appear in the new series Secret Garden, where he reveals the hidden worlds within Britain's gardens. Over 5 episodes across the UK, the series will capture the rich diversity of life in Britain's back gardens, while also reflecting on how the public can do their bit to save struggling species. The presenter will also appear in David Attenborough's 100 Years on Planet Earth, a live event from the Royal Albert Hall featuring the BBC Concert Orchestra and special guests. The week will also see special episodes from Sir David's most loved series, including Planet Earth 2, Seven Worlds, One Planet, Blue Planet 2, Planet Earth 3, Frozen Planet 2, and his most recent film, Wild London, along with a dedicated collection of 40 of Sir David's most loved programmes on iPlayer. Jack Bootle, head of commissioning for Specialist Factual at the BBC, said, "It is impossible to overstate what Sir David Attenborough has given us. His programmes have not only defined science and natural history broadcasting, but they have also changed how we see our planet and our place within it. This special week is a celebration of an extraordinary milestone and of a body of work that continues to inspire awe, curiosity, and care for the natural world. It is also a moment for all of us at the BBC to say thank you to David for his generosity, for his brilliance, and for a lifetime spent bringing the wonders of nature into our homes."
I hope that my musical choices this month do not cast a blight on meteorological forecasts, because I have decided to select pieces that celebrate or anticipate springtime. By the time this is broadcast, we shall be a mere 5 days away from April and just over a week from Easter. So, subject to the effects of climate change, I should be spot on. The four pieces or extracts I have chosen will appear in chronological order, and they represent, in turn, Austria, Poland, the Czech Republic, and Germany. First stop, from Franz Joseph Haydn's secular oratorio, The Seasons, the opening chorus, Come Gentle Spring. It was first performed in April 1801 in Vienna, and Haydn was prompted to write it following the success of his previous religious oratorio, The Creation, in 1798. Like The Creation, The Seasons was intended as a German-English bilingual work, since Haydn was very popular in England following his visits in the early to mid-1790s. Haydn took 2 years to complete the work, partly because his health was failing, and partly because the libretto was taxing. The opening section for full choir and orchestra is indeed a joyous welcome to the springtime of the year and the end of winter. To quote from the libretto, "And now she hears the gentle spring, her soft and balmy breaths we feel, and soon will life to all return." Next, taking center stage, Frédéric Chopin and his Raindrop Prelude, Opus 28, Number 15, reminding us that while spring may be here, those little April showers are likely to catch us without our waterproofs or umbrellas. While spring may be here, those little April showers are still likely to catch us without our waterproofs or umbrellas. This is one of Chopin's 24 preludes and among his most famous works. Usually lasting between 5 and 7 minutes, it is also the longest of the 24. It was probably written in 1838 when he was staying in Mallorca. He was staying with Georges Sand and her son Maurice in a monastery at Valdemossa. The latter two were returning from Parma during a heavy rainstorm, and it is thought that Chopin played this to them, especially as it evokes a gentle patter of rain. In a totally different context and environment, It also appears in the James Bond film Moonraker in 1979, when Bond meets first his antagonist, Hugo Drax, at his estate, and Drax plays this piece. From Poland to Czechoslovakia. In these days, it is no great leap, since they both share nearly 500 miles of their border. But in the days of Bedřich Smetana, 1824 to 1884, travel between the two countries would have been much longer. Smetana is best known for his opera The Bartered Bride and his symphonic poem Vltava in Czech or The Moldau in English. Vltava is a symphonic poem written in 1874 and premiered in April 1875. The Vltava, or Moldau, is one of Bohemia's great rivers within the largest and westernmost region of the Czech Republic. In this piece, Smetana uses tone painting to evoke the sounds of the river as it starts from two small springs, merging into a single stream, and then its course through woods and meadows. It goes past a farmer's wedding into the St. John's Rapids. It widens as it flows through Prague, and then it eventually joins the Elbe. Arguably, this is Smetana's most famous tune, and it is often performed as a standalone piece. Finally, A Jolly Little Song by the German composer Kurt Weill. It is another spring-type song called Green Up Time, from a Broadway musical of 1948 called Love Life, in which Weill collaborated with Alan J. Lerner. Although she did not appear in the original stage show, the most well-known performances are by Lottie Lenya. Weill is probably best known for his song Mack the Knife, whilst Green Up Time refers to the spring period when vegetation, particularly lawns, trees and shrubs, break dormancy and signify the start of the new season. The term originates from the Appalachian region in the southern United States. The song only lasts about 2.5 minutes, so it doesn't tax us too much, but it leaves us in an upbeat mood, which I hope may carry you forward until the next time we meet over the airwaves.
The Return of the Beaver, King's Lynn Magazine, March 2026. When volunteers at Penthorpe Natural Park discovered a felled tree bearing unusual marks in a remote corner of the reserve, they had no idea they were witnessing the beginning of something remarkable. Only after setting up cameras and monitoring the area closely did they confirm what had seemed almost impossible. A wild beaver had returned to Norfolk. The evidence was unmistakable. Gnawed timber, stripped bark, all the classic signs of beaver activity, says Penthorpe Reserve Manager Richard Spowage. We put camera traps out to see whether we could catch a glimpse, and it took about a week to get some footage. That's when we knew for certain we had a resident beaver. The cameras remained in place ever since, capturing intimate glimpses of the beaver's daily life. We watched it encounter an otter, which was amazing, Richard adds. It slapped its tail as if to say, "This is my patch, you go somewhere else." It was a very positive sign that it felt happy in its new home. What no one realised at the time, however, was that the beaver was not alone. Continued monitoring has now revealed something far more significant. New footage has confirmed two individual beavers together, displaying grooming behaviour and occupying a substantial lodge deep within Penthorpe's restored wetlands. What began as the return of a single dispersing animal has become an even more extraordinary discovery. The first settled wild beaver pair in Norfolk for 500 years. Beavers are large, semi-aquatic rodents, known for their ability to reshape landscapes. They have dense fur for warmth, webbed hind feet suited to swimming, dexterous front paws for carrying materials, and strong iron-rich teeth capable of felling trees. Contrary to popular belief, they don't eat fish. These industrious vegetarians feed on aquatic plants, bark, and soft inner wood of trees. Until now, every beaver in the county has lived within an enclosure, which makes the origins of Penthorpe newcomers even more intriguing. Nearby facilities have confirmed that none of their animals are missing, but wherever they came from, this pair has clearly claimed Penthorpe as home. Meanwhile, at nearby Sculthorpe Moor Nature Reserve, another chapter in the county's beaver story is unfolding. The Hawk and Owl Trust have been running a reintroduction project there for 4 years within a 52-acre enclosure. What began with a single pair has now grown into a family of seven, offering valuable insight into how these animals could transform Norfolk's future landscapes. Beavers are a keystone species and vital ecosystem engineers, explains Liberty Wells, outreach and conservation ranger at the Hawk and Owl Trust. They have a huge impact on their surrounding habitats, shaping wetlands and creating diverse environments for other species to thrive. By blocking ditches and forming floodplains, beavers slow water during heavy rainfall, reducing flood risk downstream. Their dams act as a natural filter, removing nitrates, phosphates and sediment, while their tree felling opens up woodland canopies and allows more light to reach the ground. The results at Sculthorpe are already visible. We've seen an increase in dragonflies and damselflies, and there have been lots of froglets this year, says Liberty. A pair of kingfishers even made a burrow in a fallen tree. With the ditches full and the new wetlands areas forming, there's more hunting ground for them, so the beavers have created both habitat and a food source. Back at Penthorpe, the wild pair are displaying classic behaviour, storing food, felling trees and maintaining their lodge, a sturdy dome of sticks and mud that shows they are firmly settling in. Detailed monitoring has shown no alteration to water levels, no impact on neighbouring land, no infrastructure concerns, and no implications for visitor safety. The animals are behaving entirely naturally within a suitable river habitat. What drew these beavers to Penthorpe highlights an important conservation lesson about the power of non-intervention. We've not taken out fallen trees and we've not cleared the river edges, Richard explains. Rather than what we've actually done, it's what we've chosen not to do that has created this amazing habitat. For now, the beavers' exact location remains confidential to protect them from disturbance. This isn't a visitor attraction, and we're grateful to the public for respecting that, says Richard. We have to accept that these nocturnal creatures are almost impossible to see in the wild, but we'll continue sharing the footage that we capture. Those eager to observe beavers can visit Sculthorpe Moor, where guided tours and evening walks offer the chance to see the resident family and learn more about their ecological role. We've been surprised by how often we see them and how tolerant they are of us, says Liberty. We've had some wonderful sightings of both adults and kits. These are remarkable creatures, Richard says. It's amazing that animals, whatever their origins, have responded to being free by doing exactly what their species should do. A thriving pair of wild beavers will undoubtedly bring real benefits to our rivers and ecosystems here in Norfolk.
And those items conclude this week's magazine supplement. Our thanks go to the authors of these articles for their contributions. Thank you.
Returning to the news, our penultimate selection of articles include Romantic Restaurant Award, New Lease of Life for Country Pub, New Play, Channel 5 programme, Funeral Donation, New Minibus, Best Beaches, and a visit from a Hollywood actress.
Two restaurants in Norfolk have been named among the most romantic in the UK. The booking site, Open Table, has released its top 100 romantic restaurants list for 2026. The local venues were included, The Lodge at Salhouse and The White Horse at Brancaster Staithe. The Lodge is run by the Colchester family, which also owns The Recruiting Sergeant in Horsted, Black Boys Hotel in Aylsham, The Rising Sun in Coltishall, The Buck's Arms in Blickling and The Swan in Ringland. The White Horse at Brancaster Staithe also belongs to a leading local hospitality group, Anglian Country Inns. The list was released after data revealed 27% more people used Open Table to book a Valentine's Day meal out in 2026 than in 2025. No matter who you're sharing the table with, you want to get the backdrop right, said Sasha Shaker, Senior Director at Open Table in the UK and Ireland. Our top 100 romantic restaurants list for 2026 helps diners discover their perfect spot, whether it's an intimate table for two or a group dining space.
New owners are hoping to bring a new lease of life to a country pub. The Cross Keys Pub in Dillham is being taken over by husband and wife team from North Walsham, Adam and Rachel Miller. It has been closed since the end of January, after the last owners, Paul and Karen Grothier, decided to sell up. The couple opened on March the 14th, after giving the pub a refresh while considering its historical features, which date back to 1730. Mr. Miller said, "We want to give the place a new lease of life. We have opened up the original entrance and painted the whole building, which looks better already. They have also changed up the food options, serving a bar and an à la carte menu featuring meals such as steak and chips, Thai curry, French onion soup and sea bass. Both of us have worked in hospitality, but neither of us has owned a business or a pub before," said Mr. Miller. "We have had a good response from the public so far, especially on socials." To introduce themselves to locals, the couples went door to door in Dillham and said this got them a lot of interest. Mr. Miller added, "Our goal is to reinvest in the local community, and we want people to come in and enjoy themselves." On Sunday, they held a Mother's Day deal for visitors, including two courses for £30 and a free sweet treat for the first 60 people. Also at the venue is a large garden area with play equipment for children, and the couple hopes to host live musicians at future events. The pub sits just off the street in Dillham, which is on the edge of the Norfolk Broads.
A gripping new stage production is set to premiere in May. Crossing the Line will debut at venues across the east of England, starting at St George's Theatre in Great Yarmouth on Monday, May the 11th. The play explores the dangers of county lines exploitation through the story of Eric, a teenager who becomes drawn into a dangerous criminal network following the death of his father. Following its premiere in Great Yarmouth, Crossing the Line will be performed at venues including the Sheringham Little Theatre.
The lavish life of a family who live in a £1.2 million mansion near Norwich has been revealed in a new episode of a Channel 5 programme. Parents of three, Matt and Danny, run Custom Touring Mattresses, a luxury mattress and bedding business which turns over more than £2.4 million a year. The Crosthwick locals met in the village pub, The White Horse, 13 years ago, and have since moved into a £1.2 million home together and raised their children. Now the couple have appeared on Rich House, Poor House, a series where two families from opposite ends of the financial spectrum swap homes, budgets and lifestyles for 1 week. They swapped lives with Katie, a single mother from Cambridgeshire, juggling four part-time jobs while caring for her father, who suffers from heart failure and is both deaf and diabetic. Matt and Danny had to live on Katie's £82.61 weekly budget post bills, while Katie and her daughters were allowed to splash out with a £1,900 weekly allowance. Katie's family were able to indulge in takeaways and pricey clothing, while Matt and Danny enjoyed staying home and playing board games to save the limited money they had. Despite this, the Norfolk couple were able to make some repairs at the house in Cambridgeshire that Katie could never afford, such as painting the wooden staircase and hanging a curtain in her bedroom window. At the end of the show, the families met face to face for the first time. Matt and Danny offered to pay for the struggling family to enjoy a holiday on a boat on the Norfolk Broads for a week. They also put £500 towards Katie's idea to set up a second-hand clothing firm specialising in plus-size clothes and created a five-year business plan.
A funeral donation has raised more than £6,000 for the RNLI. The family of Chris Ayres, an RNLI volunteer, gave cheques worth £6,000 and £260 collected at his funeral to the organisation at his wake on March 12th. Mr Ayres volunteered for Sheringham RNLI for 56 years, starting as shore helper, then moving on to boat crew, tractor driver and finally station manager. On the day, an update on the repairs to Sheringham Lifeboat House was also given.
A new minibus is helping young people enjoy more experiences beyond the classroom. Sheringham Woodfields School, which supports children with complex learning and health needs, has taken delivery of a 17-seat minibus light. The vehicle is wheelchair accessible and designed for use with a standard Category B driving licence, allowing more staff to drive it without needing additional qualifications. This improvement means that all pupils, including those who use wheelchairs, can take part in off-site activities. Annette McConaughey, head teacher at Sheringham Woodfield School, said, "It's great to be able to offer more opportunities for our pupils to access the wonderful local community and all that it has to offer. This is such an important aspect of helping our pupils prepare for life beyond Sheringham Woodfield School." The Friends of Sheringham Woodfield School played a key role in funding the minibus through ongoing fundraising efforts. The purpose-built school, located on the outskirts of Sheringham, currently has more than 160 staff, supporting 161 pupils. It offers a range of specialist facilities and inclusive learning environments tailored to meet individual needs.
Six beaches in Norfolk have been named among the best in the UK. Travel magazine Condé Nast Traveller has compiled a list of the top 60 beaches in the country based on expert opinion. Holcombe, Cromer, Hunstanton, Brancaster, Sheringham and Clyde next the sea were all included in the rankings. Experts ranked Holcombe ninth, describing the beach as otherworldly. The award-winning spot is known for its vast, expansive golden sands and has featured in several films, including Shakespeare in Love and Annihilation. Described as the ultimate seaside escape, Hunstanton placed 13th, with the dog-friendly Brancaster Beach coming in 20th. The rivalry continued along the North Norfolk coast, as Cromer took 29th place and Sheringham had to settle for 32nd. The final beach to be featured was Clye next the sea, which is known for its 18th century windmill and Marshes Nature Reserve. It came in 58th. Botany Bay in Kent was named the best beach in the UK, with Trevone Bay and Cenon Cove in Cornwall completing the top three.
A Hollywood actress, best known for starring in an award-winning romance comedy, has enjoyed a visit to the North Norfolk coast. Kim Cattrall, who played Samantha Jones in Sex and the City, spent time in Cromer and the surrounding area last week. The star shared photos on Instagram, saying she was strolling through beautiful Norfolk on a beautiful day. The 69-year-old also included a picture of her posing in front of Cromer Pier. Cattrall, who was born in Liverpool and grew up in Canada, received 5 Emmy nominations and 4 Golden Globe nominations during her time in Sex and the City. In recent years, she's appeared in How I Met Your Father, Queer as Folk, and About My Father. Cattrall is no stranger to the Norfolk coast, as she has family living in the county. She shared photos of a trip to Blakeney in 2022 and a walk with her cousins in Overstrand in 2018.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of The Mardler, with readings from the North Norfolk News. If you have any comments or queries, you can contact our listener liaison officer, Imogen Waterson, on 01263 587 610.
Perhaps we should just mention that if you have a smartphone, tablet or computer, or know someone who has, you can listen to this and other editions online at mardler.org.uk. You can also use an Alexa smart speaker, a variety of smartphone apps, or even a telephone call to listen. Find out the details on our website mardler.org.uk.
We rely on receiving your returned memory sticks and pouches so that we can continue to send you new editions each week. So please, remember to return the pouch and memory stick promptly, making sure to reverse the address label first.
The sound engineer today was David Mitchell. Editing and producing this issue was Manny Gomez. Colleagues in the copying and dispatch room, join us in wishing you the best of health. And we look forward to joining you again in a week's time. But for now, it's
cheerio!